Welcome in on a Tuesday evening, the On Texas Football channel, over 50,000 subscribers now. Thank you to you guys. It's brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings, and it would be the Tuesday night live stream. And the Longhorns have a commitment, verbal commitment, coming out of the June recruiting period. We'll talk about it coming up. CJ Vogel will get us the latest on that. Rod Babers happens to be a cornerback commitment, so we'll get some thoughts from the DBU alum. That should be good. Also, the SEC has announced some more kick times for the SEC schedule this year, including the Longhorns. We'll dive into some of that and kind of have a full picture of there's still some to be determined, but a lot more substance as far as what time these games are going to start in 2024. And speaking of game times, we're now 84 days away from the Longhorns starting their season. I think we're about 19 days to the Longhorns officially joining the SEC, 34 days until the Longhorns and all of the SEC gathers for SEC Media Days up in Dallas. That'll be coming your way in the middle of July. So we're counting down the days, but a recruiting hotbed and a hot season here in the month of June. It always is now for Steve Sarkisian and the staff with big recruiting weekends. Had one last weekend, another big one coming this weekend. CJ Vogel, give us the breaking news and the update on the commitment from today if folks haven't already seen that.
Yeah, absolutely. Texas earned a commitment from Fort Bend Marshall cornerback Caleb Chester, 6'1", 175, 180-pound corner, a really talented athlete. We see the athleticism on tape. Of course, he's got lengthy arms, can really run. He does a great job of fighting through contact to get to the football when he's in coverage. Texas has been on him for quite a while. Of course, he was offered May 16th of 2023. He was on campus for the junior day in July, or in January, excuse me, came back again in early April, and now makes his commitment just a few days after Texas hosted him for an official visit. Has a lot of pull in the Houston area. Of course, goes to high school with two top 2026 in-state defensive prospects as well. That'll be Isaiah Williams, the safety, as well as Noriel Dominguez, the linebacker. So really talented defense down there at Fort Bend Marshall. And, of course, he is the first member of the secondary in the 2025 class for the Longhorns, also the 11th commitment in total for this cycle. And you can expect that number to grow as June continues. Of course, 16 guys expected on campus this weekend and 20 the weekend following. So a number of guys coming in after. But this is a really impressive addition to this group as well. You know, Texas cornerback recruiting has kind of been all over the map a little bit in 2025. This is a great start and allows Texas a little bit of a sigh of relief, you know, some deeper breaths to come in and kind of sit back and reevaluate where they are in their cornerback recruiting for 2025. I'm a big fan of Caleb Chester, and I think he'll be a fine addition to this Texas program.
Hey, Rod, you've talked about watching film on these guys. I mean, Texas doesn't, you know, they say they don't chase stars. They're trying to identify traits and film work. What have you seen from Caleb Chester that you think they like a lot?
There's a lot to like about the young man. I got my notes right here. Jerry told me to watch some film on him a couple of weeks ago just because he's one of those guys that he thought could end up going to Texas. And once again, my man Jerry's right on the money there. But you got to recruit what you can't coach. We've been talking about this for a while. And Texas is starting now to recruit coverage specialists. And with Caleb Chester, you have a press coverage specialist, somebody who can play press coverage. He also can play off as well. I mean, he's got great range where he's playing off, whether he's playing zone or playing man. So he's a versatile scheme fit in any system, doesn't matter. And he's got fluid hips. He's got the quick feet, all those things that would take it takes to make a great corner. But in terms of his elite traits, what I love about his game is he's a press coverage specialist. He's a guy that has many different types of technique and methods of playing press man, and some of it obviously on display here on his film. But that tells me he's a student of the game, that he's a technician. I try to throw my back seven guys in, you know, three different categories. Either you're a disruptor, or you're a technician, or you're a ball hawk. This young man is a technician, especially when it comes to playing press coverage. Sark has been on the record publicly saying they want to play press man. The reason for that is it's more the evolution of the game. It's an evolutionary adaptation. Got to play more press man now because the game at the college and the NFL level is becoming more of a three-step game. We're from 3 yards in a cloud of dust to now it being a three-step drop kind of game, a quick game. That's what 60 to 65% of NFL passing game is, quick game, three-step drops. The college game is becoming that too, just because of RPO. RPO is combination of the quick game and the run game. So you need corners who can play press to disrupt the timing initially of that RPO tag, whatever it's going to be, and then force that quarterback to either hold on to the ball or have to go to a second option or abandon the tag altogether. So that's kind of, that's just the football theory of why you want to get press corners. But Sark's been on that for a while, and this young man can do it. And I love what CJ brought up about him being able to disrupt the catch of the receiver, being able to disrupt the catch point, if you will, of the receiver. That's because he takes great angles to the football, whether he's playing off coverage or whether he's actually playing man. Watch his angles to the receiver and angles to the football to cut them off at the point of attack or to cut off the path of their route. He does it really, really well. And you can see it all throughout. You can even see it here when he's playing press, stays on the upfield shoulder. He just has a great awareness, astutely and acutely is able to diagnose angles to the football guy. So he's got adequate speed, but it almost makes him faster on the football field. And he's long and rangy. He got a long wingspan and long arms. So combine that with his ability to diagnose angles, guys, that's football speed. That means a guy that can make up ground on a football field and can close in on angles really quickly. So there's a lot to love about his game, and I'm glad that he hopped on board. I'm glad Texas was, obviously recruiting him from the jump, even though he's kind of a late bloomer, I guess, when it comes to recruiting because he just kind of jumped on the map. But, man, you can tell his game is maturing as a young player right now, and even watching him, like I said, there's no scheme that he won't be an ideal fit for.
Yeah, Rod, I wanted to point it out just real quick, but you understand and you see the intellect that he has at the cornerback position. A lot of these plays that we just watched were along the sideline and just recognizing where he positions his body and how he kind of positions the wide receiver closer to the sideline is really, really advanced for where he was as a junior in high school. Of course, those are things that you're taught at the next level in college. So for him to kind of showcase some of those skills early of where and how to approach wide receivers along the sideline, really important. Of course, that's your 12th defender in terms of being a defensive back. Really impressive stuff. I'm a big fan of his. I think Texas did a good job getting him in the fold after a strong official visit weekend.
Yeah, I agree.
CJ, where you mentioned the cornerback and defensive back recruiting class for 2025, where else are they looking? I know there's the kid from Conroe, Dorian Brew is a big name. I mean, where do they stand with that defensive backfield for Terry Joseph and Blake Kidion on top of what they've gotten today?
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one, right? You know, we've seen how Texas is approaching some of this SEC recruiting on the linebackers specifically, Riley Pettijohn coming in. I mean, they've got a commitment. The front seven's starting to take shape as well. Cornerback's a bit more interesting, right? You know, they're taking an official visit, a midweek official visit from Dijon Lee this week. He previously left Texas out of his top four. But if you're Texas and what we've seen recently is they value speed and they value length. Well, you don't say no to a 6'4 cornerback that's coming in and wants to visit. That's for sure. So we'll see what kind of moves Texas can make this weekend, as well as Tristan Castro. And this is another one out of California. We'll see what kind of moves Texas will be able to make there as well. We're still waiting on Dorian Brew to lock in that official visit for Texas. He was originally slated to come in last week, June 7th, made it out to USC instead, had a graduation in the family out on the West Coast, so wanted to be closer to that so he could kind of, book in the weekend with football and family. Understand 100%. Now it's up for Texas to get in touch with Dorian Brew and just kind of figure out what that next best weekend is for him. Of course, Texas A&M, Ohio State, a lot of schools heavily in the mix for Dorian Brew. Texas wants him on a weekend. What does that mean for Dorian Brew? He's going to have to bump one of his already existing official visits for the Longhorns. That's not easy. That's not an easy thing to do. So we'll see. We're still waiting on confirmation. But right now, more bodies are coming into the fold. Obviously, Devin Williams, the Auburn commit. You look down the line a little bit, Aiden Anding, Cade Phillips. So we're starting to take a little bit of a deeper look as these next 2 weeks come up. It'll be very important for not only the cornerbacks, but the safeties as well, just how this room will entirely shake up.
All right, and a big weekend on tap, CJ. We know that. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking about it the rest of the week here on Texas Football. Our Tuesday live stream brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. We'll tell you about them here coming up. But, 2 days into the week. What is it looking like as far as the recruiting weekend, even bigger than last weekend? And last week was pretty big.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you start looking down the list, 16 guys this weekend, 20 the week after. So Texas got a good little bit of, you know, wet feet with this one. You know, they got to dip their toe in the water and understand what it was like for the official visits. Obviously, they set out all the Lamborghinis in Austin out front. Who knows what they'll be able to do with 20 guys coming in almost the next 2 weeks as well. I made the joke, you know, we saw the Lamborghinis come in. Where are they going to park Quinn's private jet that he got an NIL deal with, right? That's going to be the next step for these guys in terms of showing off what the Texas power can do. So I'll be interested to see what other tricks they have up their sleeve. Obviously, we saw the new Longhorn walkway right outside of Moncrief as well. Sarkisian was in the doorway as these guys funneled into the Texas facility. The cars out front. Almost three times as many guys coming in this week. It'll be a really, really important week. And, of course, highlighted by none other than DeCorian Moore, the number one wide receiver in all of the country. You know, he'll be coming back onto campus for his fourth time since the winter. This is a very important one. Of course, he was on LSU's campus a week ago where he was previously committed. It sounds like LSU has an opportunity to get back into things for DeCorian Moore. We'll see all things point towards the Longhorns here. But a number of commits, Ricky Stewart, Brandon Brown. It's very important for Texas with Brandon Brown. LSU and Tennessee both made great impressions. It'll be important for Brandon Brown and the Longhorns to get back onto the same footing here, as well as Lance Jackson out of Texas High, one of my favorites in the class, 6'6", 265. On top of that, a number of really talented wide receivers, Kelshon Johnson, Dalen McCutcheon, Andrew Marsh. And if I could put my eye on just one more guy, it would be Riley Pettijohn, the linebacker out of McKinney. Texas has a commit already at the linebacker group with Elijah Beau Barnes. Barnes was sitting there with Pettijohn at the Texas spring game saying, hey, man, this is the place for you. This is the place for us. Let's do something special as the linebacker tandem at the University of Texas. They were pushing for him in the spring. I imagine that push will be even stronger with him on campus for an official visit this weekend.
And there you see the rundown of official visitors this weekend. Longhorns, I believe, up to 12 commitments now with the commitment from today with the cornerback out of Fort Bend as the Longhorns build that 2025 recruiting class, and it's ongoing into this weekend and beyond. Rod, I know I'm sure you talked about it, but DeCorian Moore as a corner trying to deal with that, what do you see? I mean, we see what I see is as kind of a – I'm not the biggest recruiting insider like Jerry and CJ and you guys. I just hear five-star receiver from Texas, and I immediately think of – you know, Garrett Wilson, and I think of Jalen Waddle, and I think, Dez Bryant back in the day. Just the, you know, these great receivers. This one stacks up with any of them. It looks like out of Duncanville. I didn't know until I talked to Jerry today that he's got Austin ties with a grandmother and family from here. So this would be a big one for Texas. What have you seen from DeCorian Moore that really excites you?
It scares you if you're a defensive back more than excites you. He's got elite speed. So you talk about a guy's got world-class speed. So you throw that out there on top of and sprinter speed is so much different than football speed. We talked about this at Nas. You guys know this, and everybody who's watched a lot of football knows it. You know, this was a concern about Xavier Worthy, right? Oh, he's a world-class sprinter. Does he have sprinter speed or football speed? He's actually got both, because to me, the football speed is more about your acceleration and deceleration, how quickly you can get to, you know, max speed and how quickly you can decelerate. And he's got that. I call it for receivers, I call it location acceleration, where you can it'll seem like a receiver is running max speed. I've experienced this actually, and it's, like I said, it's downright frightening. When you're running, you think you're running at top speed with the receiver. Ball's thrown, he locates the ball, and then he hits a different gear. And you think to yourself, well, I thought we were running max speed, where at least I was, just to keep up with this wide receiver. That's happening to me in the NFL a couple of times, because those are elite athletes. He's got that kind of location, except Ryan Wingo's got that, where he can – it can almost feel like he's max speed, but yet while locating the ball, eyes on the ball, he can hit a different gear and separate from the defensive back. I still think he's raw when it comes to running routes. Most wide receivers are when they're coming out of high school. But this guy, like I said, his burst and his, you know, lateral quickness, it kind of reminds me. I know I threw this out there at Jerry, because Jerry told me to give him a player comp, and I was like, man, honestly, it's tough when you look at a guy like that to give you a player comp, because he is such a special athlete. I don't know, kind of Joey Galloway stood out to me a little bit watching DeCorian Moore. There's a lot of, you know what I mean, in terms of the acceleration. Someone said Santana Moss, UT boy. Yeah, because that's what it is, right? That the ability to stop and start, but also hit max speed on you. You know, not everybody can do that. I think he can. I think he carries his weight well. I mean, he's not some skinny framed wide receiver at 5'11", 185. I mean, he's got some tone to him. And I think, I don't know what Galloway was. He was probably 190, you know what I mean, like 195, something like that. So maybe he gains 5 or 7 pounds when he's in college. But that was kind of the first comp. I don't know if there's a better comp. CJ, you might have a better one. I'm old. So I'm an old man, and I go back to my old school comps. But that's the one that I saw when I watched DeCorian Moore on film, and that's a pretty damn good one. I mean, he's one of the best. I think DeCorian Moore's got first round talent written all over him. And by the way, receiver, beautiful place to be these days, guys. It is officially wide receiver is the second most important position in football. It is. The NFL has spoken, ladies and gentlemen. They have spoken. You go look at the positions and non-quarterbacks making at least $30 million a year. All right. Right now, there are 6 of them. And 4 of them are wide receivers. And that just happened in like the last year or so. And by the way, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, and Brandon Ayuk about to join that club. You about to have 9 non-quarterbacks in the NFL making at least $30 million, and 7 of them about to be wide receivers, ladies and gentlemen. Let that sink in. Not left tackles, not edge rushers, nope, not cornerback, no, wide receiver. Second most important position in football right now. And it's right now slows. It's no signs of slowing down. They're going to continue to draft a lot of them early. This young man, if he continues to stay on track, I've seen some of his workouts and everything. If he just stays focused and stays healthy, knock on wood, that dude's a first round pick. And for Sark, if you're Sark in that wide receiver friendly offense, that's why wide receivers love Sark's offense, right? It's wide receiver friendly, but also it's that big time quarterbacks that he brings in to accompany with his wide receiver friendly offense, also quarterback friendly. So they think the guys think about playing with a Arch Manning or another high level elite quarterback on top of it, playing in a really exciting, creative, innovative offense for a wide receiver. So it's not, you can see why it's, and by the way, Sark's program kind of reflects the value of the wide receiver. Brought in 3 via the transfer portal this year. We're thinking about bringing in 3 in this damn recruiting class, potentially 5, 3, almost 3 5 stars potentially in this recruiting class. So I love that Sark's, you know, his methods and seems like his blueprint, it does reflect. He talks about it all the time. Hey, we should do it like the NFL does. The NFL solves a lot of these problems. He uses his NFL experience and NFL ties to try his best to mimic a lot of that blueprint. And I think he's doing it with the wide receiver and how the importance of it, too.
Yeah, that's well said. Hence the Lamborghinis, right? Speed and performance and quickness. Exactly. And acceleration.
Exactly.
Excellence, those kind of things. Do you have a comp, CJ? I saw somebody say Odell Beckham. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Just explosive, but, you know, and then just the track speed. But DeCorian Moore, does he, you know, you've covered recruiting here pretty closely for the last decade plus. Does anybody he reminds you of?
No, I'm not the best at comps. I liked that Santana Wilson one. You know, you look at what DeCorian Moore brings to the table, and first and foremost, it's that quick acceleration, and then it's that speed, you know. Of course, he's a 10.3 guy. He wanted to go 10.2 for the state 100-meter race. Look, very rarely do you come across a guy that is as clean in his route with as much acceleration and top-end speed as DeCorian Moore has. Not to mention he can catch a football pretty well as well, so When you look at it holistically, he's the whole he's the entire package that you want in a wide receiver one in a Sarkisian offense, right? And it's funny, you know, the two quarterbacks that Texas was recruiting in this cycle, one was thrown to Ryan Williams, who reclassified from 25 to 2024, was very much in the same group, right? You know, Keelan Russell thrown to DeCorian Moore, KJ Lacy thrown to Ryan Williams. It was very fun to sit back and watch these quarterbacks kind of, you know, sit back and try and evaluate them. And you look over at the wide receivers thinking, holy cow, you know, these guys are pretty darn good. So that's one of the things that is very, you know, fun about recruiting is you understand where these guys are kind of getting their high school plays and highlights and attention from. But to DeCorian Moore, it wouldn't have mattered who was throwing him the football. As long as it was out in front of him, he was going to find a way to separate and go get the rock. That's my favorite part about him. And, of course, he's got plenty of ties to Texas, right? You know, he was out here for the Texas State Relays with his Duncanville 4x1 team. And the first person to greet him whenever he got off the track was Colin Simmons. How do I know? I was standing right there watching Colin Simmons trot over from the Moncrief facility underneath the track to go over there and say hello and dap him up. So there's a lot of Texas connections here. And, again, I'd be – very surprised if we flip the calendar to July and we do hear about someone else above Texas in this recruitment. I would be very surprised if that's the case right now. Again, I think Texas is the certified number one for DeCorian Moore. And this weekend is a great opportunity for the Longhorns to expand that lead as they go into the dog days of June and into the summer months a little bit later.
Hey, CJ, I got a question for you. Can you, where's DeCorian Moore from? Is it Duncanville?
Duncanville, yep.
Duncanville, okay. And we were just talking about Caleb Chester committing from, was it Fort Ben Marshall is the school in H-Town? And I want to say, like, in the last 10 years, they've had something like 18, maybe it's like 18 prospects that have been signed via Power Five schools. By the way, I got that from Jordan Scruggs. Shout out to him. So your boy does a great job. So, but I want to talk about these pipelines because, you know, some schools that are – just you know, powerhouse programs in the state of Texas that are these marquee, you know, year after year, consistently competing for championship, those types of programs. And we know they are in the state of Texas. It seems like it's, and I don't know, it just kind of happens this way naturally, or if it's delivered by Sark, they're trying to create a pipeline at some of those universities. You talked about it, Caleb Chester. He's got two other teammates that are also going to be high-level prospects who are going to be recruited on Texas radar. Duncanville, we talked about it with Denton Ryan, with guys like, you know, even McKinney, you just talked about it. They got Derek Williams on the team, and it seems like they're targeting, you know, McKinney because they're producing a lot of high-level prospects. Is the pipeline just organically formed because these are the best institutions for football in the state of Texas, and they're producing these players? They got great culture, which Sark loves, and, you know, Sark likes that they are cultivating great football character and developing talent there. Or is Sark deliberately trying to create pipelines there because he knows, hey man, these guys are going to continue to produce high level prospects, and we need to get them recruiting their former teammates. We need to know the coaches. We need to have a presence here all the time. So when the guys are good, they think, damn, Texas is coming to see me finally, because all the guys that I once looked up to that went here, that played in the neighborhood that I knew and I knew their families, they all went to Texas. Like, which one is it? Which is chicken, egg? What are we talking about here?
I lean that it happens more organically and naturally than forcing a take from a school to come back a few weeks later, a few years later down the road and saying, hey, this is where you need to go because, of course, we got your boy. This is what it's like at Texas. You know, you look at where Texas has pulled multiple kids out of in recent cycles, specifically from the DFW area. We'll start at Denton Ryan, 5-star Jatavion Sanders, 5-star Anthony Hill. In between them, Austin Jordan. You did a great job. You got three really talented guys. Of course, they made their impact here at Texas. You go down the road a little bit to Duncanville. 5-star Colin Simmons. Obviously, Cam Williams was a big one at the time as well, a few years before. But you add Alex January to the fold as well. And now you're positioned even better with a DeCorian Moore. They hosted Braylon Edwards, the 2026 defensive back as well for the June 1st Elite Camp, as was KJ Ford, the defensive edge out of Duncanville in 2026. So as a result of having these guys already on campus, of course, they go back to the facility when they're home for the offseason. They chat with Coach Samples over there, a legend in Texas high school football. But more than that, they see, and the high school kids see, these kids working out in Texas here. They see the orange shorts. They see the Longhorn on the chest. They're in the weight room. They're running routes, whatever it is. They're just being a part of the community that helped grow them, but more so they helped grow the Texas community out to them. You know, you go back up to McKinney as well. We saw Texas go out and get an ad 5-star Xavier Filsimi a year ago. What did they do this year? Well, they went out and they are in a great spot for Riley Pettijohn. The two talk, you know, it's no coincidence about that. So it's more natural. And I say that because if you were to force it, and if Sarkisian and his staff were to go out there and only look for guys that would help further down the line in high school recruiting, Well, I think Texas would have a little bit of a different quarterback in the 2025 class at the moment, right? You talk about where Keelan Russell is at the moment. He's at Duncanville. And I think with them sticking with KJ Lacy and understanding our evaluations come, you know, first and foremost to anything else that might come further down the road in recruiting, I think that is very important and very telling of where this staff is recruiting and kind of, you know, putting value in where they find their guys going forward. So it's fun to follow, of course, McKinney, you know, multiple guys potentially. Lovejoy, multiple guys potentially with Daniel McCutcheon coming in. Obviously, you look even, you know, further south. South Oak Cliff had a pair of guys, Manny Muhammad and Billy Walton in the same class. Duncanville, DeSoto with Trey Wisner and Jonte Cook. You know, there's plenty of talent all throughout the city and kind of metroplex of DFW. But more than that, I think they just do a great job of maintaining those relationships with the coaching staffs to help build those guys and kind of build that trust very early with those top DFW prospects.
Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good stuff. All right, so big recruiting weekend on tap. Caleb Chester is the latest commitment for the Longhorns. You're just tuning in on the On Texas Football Channel on a Tuesday night live stream. It's brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. Let me tell you about our partner tonight. For those of y'all still living in Texas and certainly in the major cities with deregulated electricity like Dallas and Houston, you understand the deregulated electricity market. It's confusing. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, actual customer reviews, and find a good electricity company and a plan that fits your needs. You know, everybody's going to be different as far as size of house, size of family. It also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that are going to end up tricking you into expensive bills. Don't go there. Go to TexasElectricityRatings.com if you're in the market for a new electricity plan. They're also great partners here on Texas Football, avid watchers and partners. We appreciate them. TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF. That's TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all of your electricity needs and hook them. And we appreciate them every Tuesday night and their partnership here on the ever-growing On Texas Football YouTube channel. Over 50,000 subscribers now because of content like you just heard from Rod and CJ and all the shows here on Texas Football. Hey, Siege, the so far, the summer workouts, I mean, I know it's just player-led workouts. Coaches can be around it. Any word? What are you hearing about how things are going so far, including the newcomers that have joined the roster that had already been there for the spring and the winter workouts? How are things going so far? Any news at all?
Yeah, you know, one of the returns I got earlier was Bill Norton, the defensive tackle out of Arizona, got on campus. And despite being listed at 6'6", 325, I think he still surprised some folks when he walked through the door and onto the field at DKR with just how much mass he possessed. I think that's very encouraging. Of course, you're looking at him to be that A-gap over-the-nose run stopper in certain situations. With him having 4 years of college football under his belt, very important that he's coming in already with a body that's been through college off seasons, a body that's been through the ringer a little bit in terms of the grind in a week-to-week football season as a contributor. Really important there. Of course, Silas Bolden's been a guy that you know, has been mentioned by a number of outlets. We've heard reports, seen the tweets. But again, this is a guy who's built to succeed in this kind of situation, right? He's you know, a jitterbug, basically, when it comes to changing direction, going through these offseason drills, whether it be cones, mat drills, or just straight-up gassers. Because, again, he's a great runner. He's got great speed. He's a 10-6 guy. And, of course, we saw the highlights. There's a reason why they called him the Beaver Joystick when he was at Oregon State, because he can just make guys miss in the phone booth. And so those are two guys I've heard a little bit of. I think the staff is still trying to work Sadir Mitchell's weight down just a little bit. But, yeah. Really encouraging stuff so far for the Texas Longhorns. And again, you know, these summer days are coming up quick, right? We'll be at June 12th tomorrow. And again, halfway through June, these guys are looking forward to July wrapping up pretty quickly so they can put the pads on and get to fall camp.
Yeah, it's going to be here before we know it. And as we said, the countdown continues to the official SEC move party that's coming up end of the month. So about 18 days of that. Then SEC Media Days in the middle of July. And then, you know, we're counting down days to the games. And speaking of the games, we'll talk about the scheduling times that have been released. But, Rod, I wanted to ask you about, you know, a guy like Bill Norton. And just, you know, the more and more that experience is currency in college football, because you don't have to rush off to the NFL like you maybe used to. We talked about it in relation to the NFL draft with, you know, guys being able to stick and stay and not try to make a roster as a sixth, seventh round draft pick or a free agent. Stay, you know, get some NIL dollars and keep playing. We're seeing that with Texas. And you know, you can remember your body different from your 18 to 19 to when you're 21, 22, 23 years old. Just yep. a different, you're more mature, your body's full, and the Longhorns are stocked on this team with experience. That's becoming a real currency in college football.
Yes, no doubt about it. I totally agree with you. And, you know, you're starting to see it in a lot of different positions now. It was something we were seeing more overwhelmingly at quarterback, where guys were taking advantage of getting NIL deals, but also, hey, I can, there are not enough high-level starting quarterbacks around, so if you can't start at one university, find one you can start at. There's probably one out there if you're a decent quarterback that you can actually start at. And you're starting to see that happen with the quarterback carousel. But now I think you're starting to see that other positions too. I mean, even at Texas, right? Jahdae Barron's a guy that probably could have chose to go to the NFL and decided, nah, you know what? Maybe I can increase my draft stock. Maybe I won't. But either way, I could make a lot of money here at Texas. I could get healthier, potentially go into the NFL on a in a better situation, a better circumstance, maybe than last season. You know, so I think you start seeing that other positions. And I say, if somebody told me that I was going to get drafted in the late rounds, as opposed to, hey, I could come back to Texas, make six figures while also playing football and potentially getting my master's degree on top of that, all right, I might choose to come back to Texas, get my master's, and have another year in Texas making six figures, stack my bread, and still next year potentially increase my draft stock. So it's such a, you know, a better situation for guys at every position now that they have options, and that coming back to school now, you don't have to take a loss when you do it. If you're coming back to increase your draft stock, it's not an investment necessarily in your future. You can come back and actually earn money. So I think it's NIL, and it's a great resource for every school to keep some of their best players from trying to, you know, obviously get to the NFL. That's everybody's ultimate dream, but you don't have to rush that. You don't have to fast track it so much. And now I think you're starting to see some of the players slow that down, even Quinn Ewers. Slow it down and go, you know what? It's all good. I can earn money here at the college level. I don't have to fast track it, whether it be for money or that be because I, you know, think that, you know, I have the best situation right now. That better situation when you're weighing it actually may be college now as opposed to the NFL, just because the money is not, it's not such a Grand Canyon sized gap. It used to be basically you were making nothing in college as opposed to making millions. Now you're making hundreds of thousands as opposed to making millions. That's a little bit more palatable than it used to be.
100%. Well, and it leads me, CJ, back to the experience thing where Sark and this staff understand where, and we're going to talk about the schedules. Phil Steele's College Football Magazine has ranked the schedules in the SEC 1 to 16. Longhorns in a good place. It appears we've talked about it, but even Phil Steele agrees. So the schedule kind of stacks up in a good way to really, as Robert Rod always says, you know, hope not a strategy. Make sure you're bringing in experienced guys for your first year in the SEC. If you look at it, you know, Jake Majors has 42 starts at center. I mean, you know, Hayden Connor has 39 starts. I mean, Kelvin Banks, I mean, DJ Campbell, defensive tackle. They had Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton, but they went out and brought in Bill Norton and Jermaine Lole and, you know, Tia Savea. These guys have years of starts. They're all 22, 23 years old, which as a coach, you kind of put your head on the pillow at night feeling comfortable that you got dudes that have played the game, understand the game, and you know, can really give you some real, not just depth, but experienced, mature depth. I think that's a big key for Texas in 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at what this defensive line room looks like, right, you know, it went from maybe a lot of question marks with Byron Murphy, you know, Tavondre Sweat, Trill Carter, even, you know, those were three of your five guys in the rotation for your final game against Washington, all departing. And then it turned into, well, is it just Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton? You know, who else is there? You know, Aaron Bryant saw some snaps later on. What Texas did in that room was really encouraging for me, right? You have two veterans already with Broughton, and you have one with Collins. You've not yet seen them live up to that every down kind of three down approach where they're productive. You've seen spurts. You've seen them have good moments in certain situations, but not consistently over an entire game because they just haven't had to be put in that position. And I think a lot of that is because, well, I don't think they won the jobs out of camp, whether it be spring camp, fall camp, whatever. They just weren't great at the consistency that was needed. So to combat that, going out adding Lole, Norton, and Savea, now you have a lot of experience. Over 1,400 snaps between the three of those guys coming in onto campus this week or this year. You can now mix and match a little bit. Of course, you still have Sadir Mitchell, the freshman Alex January. Those guys figure to be guys who you could rely on later in the year once they kind of get acclimated to the speed of the game a little bit, as well as rotational pieces. What does Aaron Bryant look like? Sarkisian's mentioned him a lot this offseason and this spring. And, of course, Jare Bledsoe, who pound for pound is probably the most athletic guy in the entire room. So what I like about this room, you have nine able bodies, nine bodies that have seen valuable snaps at some point in their career so far, with the exception of Alex January. So I like this room, whether it not be a top end guy where, you know, you talk about ratings for the video game, Rod, you know, you might not have a defensive lineman in the top 15 of your, you know, top most talented players. But what you will have is about six or seven guys that are all very capable, who you can rotate and keep fresh throughout the duration of a game, which is even more important this year because you're expecting to play 14, 15, maybe 16 football games for the first time ever. So that's really encouraging to me. I like where the depth of this room is at the moment. It's no longer what I would call the big weakness on the team. It's still a bit of a question mark with what that rotation might look like. Who are your top end guys at the end of the day? But it's been a complete overhaul, and I'm really excited to see what that room is able to produce this fall.
I think you definitely got enough bodies to money ball it, just like you mentioned, enough experience to money ball it. So that's not a huge concern situationally. My concern would be, could somebody get you in trouble potentially? Could a team get you in trouble by forcing you to keep players who are essentially either run down players, they are early down D tackles, or passing down D tackles?
Definitely
get them into running downs and get the obviously the run stuffing D tackles or your run down D tackles into passing situations. So what you want to develop ultimately, yeah, you got enough players to money ball it. You want some three down D tackles, which you had last year. Murphy, three down D tackle. So was Sweat, three down D tackle. Right now, you know, Alfred Collins should be a breakout star. I mean, this should be the year for him. And right now, he's one of the best pass rushing D tackles actually in college football. I mean, he really is. If you go look at just his pass rushing snaps, I think Pro Football Focus has him as his pass rush grade in his career is 80.6. That's first among returning SEC D tackles. You go look at him last year, Alfred Collins had 11.1% pressure rate last year, second among Big 12 interior defensive linemen. I mean, the guy can rush the passer, but that's only half the battle. Got to be able to stop the run so you can get to pass rushing downs. So to me, that's going to be Alfred Collins should be your guy. That should be a three down guy for you. He should be one of those guys you can count on, and hopefully one of the veterans you brought in. I know Lole has got that kind of ceiling as a run stuffer and a pass rusher, but he's had some injuries in his recent history as a player. So maybe that's kind of derailed that ability, but that ceiling. But he's got that kind of ceiling as a player too, because that's ultimately, I think, what you're going to need. Because the money ball approach, I think by midseason, teams may be able to isolate which defenders you're going to put on the field, therefore making you predictable in terms of the fronts you're going to run and all the different things you're going to utilize on defense. If it makes you predictable, then teams have an advantage. So that would be by midseason, you want at least one or two guys you can trust to be on the field for every down, and you don't have to rotate them situationally.
Right, and I that's the big question, right? Bill Norton, to me, is not a guy that you want in a clear passing situation, right? And I don't know if, you know, Jare Bledsoe, Aaron Bryant, if those guys have developed enough to be, on the field for multiple, first downs on a drive. I just don't know that yet. What I do know is TSFA is very good at anchoring the run, as is Bill Norton. Jermaine Lole, over his career, has been able to be a plus guy on both sides of the ball, whether it be the passing game or the running game. Is he going to be fully healthy for a season? He's been battling injuries often throughout his career as well. And then what can Vernon Broughton add to his game, right? We saw him intermittently last year for the Texas defensive line. He gave you good snaps, about 15 a game the back half of the season. But what can he do to make those standout plays? You know, he was a guy that gave you great energy, but not always the production that you were looking for of that bunch, or at least what you were expecting of when you had a Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat. So plenty of bodies, plenty of room to kind of figure it out. I liken it very similarly to what we see at the wide receiver room, right? You know, you have six bodies right now in that room that are very talented. All of them would probably contribute at some point in other SEC programs this season, but we know that Texas likes to keep that rotation very, very, very tight. That circle of trust with Sarkisian is very difficult to earn a spot in. So it's all about finding your go-to guys at those positions, specifically with this scheme and kind of the way that we've seen Texas run its personnel groups in the past.
Yeah. All right, guys, good stuff. Defensive tackle, kind of like defensive safety last year, Rod. That maybe made you a little bit predictable about by who was on the field at times for Texas. Yeah. Could target guys that you wanted to get in isolated situations. Yeah. Obviously, a little bit different, closer to the ball, closer to the line, but same kind of thing. Makes you a little bit more predictable with those guys.
You know teams are watching it. E, you pointed this out. You know teams are watching it because remember we were doing the show you told me about, and I saw, I went back and watched it, how in the Sugar Bowl you watched Kalen DeBoer wait on Vernon Broughton. He wanted to have Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins in the game before he went for it on that. Was it the fourth down that he went for it for? He waited. He called a timeout. He's like, no, they got Broughton and Collins. We're going for it. If they'd have put Sweat Murphy out there, probably be like, nah, we're punting it. So they're watching. Oh, the coaches are watching. And it does affect play calling.
Yeah, that's matchups you were looking for. All right. So the defensive line, the roster taking shape here in mid-June. That means also the schedule. We know it's taking shape, and some of the times, I know a lot of you Longhorn fans are trying to eager to make your schedule for road trips and then or, the home games here at DKR in Austin. And a little more clarity on that came out today. The SEC put out some more games. We know the Colorado State game is going to be a little bit toasty at 2:30 on the 31st, 85 days away from today. Then you're looking at Michigan at 11 a.m. That should be a nice early morning, noon, even in Michigan, Ann Arbor time. I know a ton of you folks are making the trip up there for that trip to the Big House. That'll be a blast on September 7th. Then it's UTSA. That's a night game, 6 o'clock, and then UL Monroe, 7 o'clock. We now know, at least here's where the clarity comes in from the Southeastern Conference, the Mississippi State game, the first ever Longhorn SEC contest, will be against the Bulldogs at 2:30 or 3:30 in the afternoon. Hopefully it starts to cool down, but likely to be very warm, 2:30 or 3:30. CJ, what's your read on that? That'll be either it's a 2:30 kind of ESPN game or ABC, or it'll be a 3:30 on one of the alternate channels. How do you think that works as far as the either or kind of deal?
Yeah, no, I think it depends on what the other slate of games looks like, right? You know, Mississippi State, I know, is maybe not, you know, set up to be a very competitive team this year, but it will be Texas's first SEC game. Does that outdraw what you're expected to be in kind of that afternoon slate? Luckily for Texas, and I really like this, the way that this schedule shaped out, you know, you start ESPN, Fox, ESPN, you go to ESPN Plus, and then you're likely to be back on ESPN going into Mississippi State, Oklahoma, and Georgia. So a lot of national exposure. You'll be playing in all the time slots, so nothing should surprise you later on down the road. I'm excited to see what the DKR staff and the Texas Athletics Department has in store for those 6 and 7 p.m. night games. Of course, we didn't see too many of those a year ago at home. Now you will be able to have an opportunity to escape the heat early on in that season. Maybe not for a week one against Colorado State, but weeks 3 and 4, you got to like that. As the season wears on, it should get cooler. And I really, really like the way that things are looking right now. Of course, I would love for Georgia to be a night game, and I would love for Texas A&M to be a night game. Even on the road, that game deserves to be at night, should be under the lights. Everybody that has ever watched this game would agree, I believe. Keeping that game under the lights where the intensity is at its maximum is tremendous for this rivalry. So I'm praying that's the case for that back game as well. But I really like the way that this schedule and time zones are really shaping up for the Longhorns this year.
All right. Mississippi State is 2:30 or 3:30. Oklahoma, we know, is 2:30. That'll be a standalone game at the Cotton Bowl. Georgia gets one of the super flexes. That's either 2:30 or 3:30 or 6 or 7. As CJ just said, probably a nighttime primetime game with a lot of lights and a lot of hype. And you know, could be 1-3, could be 1-2. We know, guys, in the month of October, at least as far as the preseason rankings go, you'll get an Oregon hosting Ohio State matchup, which will be a gangbusters game in Eugene, and you're going to get Texas and Georgia on the heels of Texas and Oklahoma. That's a pretty good October run there. Vanderbilt will be either the 2:30 or 3:30 slot again. Florida and Arkansas, 11 a.m. I think that, you know, at home, that it's November, should be a nice morning. The Gators, you know, will Billy Napier actually be the head coach by then becomes the question for the Gators in that conversation. And then Arkansas, it says 11 a.m. I think, you know, having been to Fayetteville a couple of years ago for that night game, I think that's a break for Texas to get that game at 11 in the morning. I know, you know, Fayetteville will be a tough place to play, but, you know, a little lesser than. I know for fans that want to drive up or be up their game with day of game, fly up day of game, it'll be a little tougher. But I think that's good for Texas to be at 11 in the morning at Fayetteville. I don't think Arkansas will be very good, but you'd rather play the morning than the night there, I think.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, honestly, that is such a blessing for Texas not to have to play. I always say, listen, that Texas will have to play in hostile environments. I mean, it goes without saying. You know, Texas A&M, that's going to be a raucous, crazy atmosphere. You know, Texas OU, even though neutral site, always wild and crazy, even though there are certain rules of engagement at the Texas State Fair. But I don't know if Texas has to go to a place more hostile from a watch your back standpoint. Like Fayetteville. I mean, Craig Wade's had a sandwich thrown at him in Fayetteville, man. It's just uncivilized. How do you throw a sandwich at Craig Wade? Craig Wade's a gentleman and a scholar, for God's sakes. Right? They don't care. So I'm with you. I think for fans, that is a definitely blessing, but I think for the team as well, because the fans won't be as much of a factor in the game. It'll be too early for them to be all lubed up, if you will. Same thing, kind of how Texas OU works out early. I will say this. The schedule, at least the way the times are at least being revealed here, it supports the notion or supports the opinion that Texas has a favorable SEC schedule. I mean, look at you got 11 a.m., you got back-to-back 11 a.m. games. Hell, you could have even more than that, depending on how Kentucky is. You could have three games in a row that are 11 a.m. or early kickoffs. That Vanderbilt one, I mean, that's going to be – so you got a stretch there where – at least even the SEC is telling you, yeah, nothing marquee, nothing sexy going on in that stretch for you, Texas. And early on, we know, obviously, that Texas OU game, 2:30 kickoff. The Texas, I would say the issue, the Texas-Georgia flex, I expect that to be prime time. I mean, I don't know exactly what the rules are, but that should be prime time. And the Texas A&M game, depending on how the Aggies, finish the season or how they are, at least what their win total is by the time they play that game, I think that should be a primetime game. I think that just bringing back the rivalry under the lights in Texas, I think it would be special in that regard. And I'm glad that the SEC, because they don't usually, from what I understand, release the schedule in terms of releasing the times this early on in the offseason. This is so if that is indeed the case, from what I understand, kudos to them. So that in the new look SEC, what all these new fans are bringing to the table and all this excitement that's generated, people can make travel plans. Yeah. Right? People got disposable incomes like, man, I'm only going to one game, but I'm going to pick it. Let me make travel plans. And it takes a while, as you know, get hotels and to get, you know, and to make sure that you're going to drive or we're going to fly, all that stuff. And by the way, in addition to that, shout out to Southwest. Because I know y'all probably heard about this. Shout out, they basically had a college football special going. They said they're launching special routes just for college football season, just for the big games.
Yeah.
I'm not making it up. They said they just made it easier for you to go see your favorite football team in September and October for 6 marquee matchups. And they said on key weekends, they've added extra service between New Orleans and Vegas, Nashville and Oklahoma City, Atlanta and Austin, Detroit and Austin, Birmingham and Milwaukee, Columbus and Portland. So all those big games you guys were just talking about, Texas, Georgia, Texas versus Michigan, Southwest added extra flights for that Oregon versus Ohio State. Now they added extra direct flights so that you can travel. And in addition, you got the schedule early. So this is, I don't know if they're coordinating all this or whatever, but it's smart. It's brilliant. So that now you can get these fan bases of these really marquee football brands that are used to or accustomed to traveling. They definitely want to go to these games. You just got to make it easy on them. And Southwest is making it easy on you, and so is the SEC. So kudos to them. Smart move. Yeah.
Well, you know what you like about it, guys? If you are, as you said, Rod, and props to Southwest Airlines, but if you're reading that graphic, put that up one more time, Matt, because I think it's the 11 o'clock games, you know, right? I mean, the 11 a.m.s are going to be Florida and Arkansas. If it says afternoon or flex, the way that the graphic reads, it won't be 11 a.m. Okay. It'll either be 2:30 or a night game. It's going to be either mid-afternoon or late, which means if you're going to Vanderbilt, which I know a lot of fans are because Nashville is such a cool town, you know you're not getting that 11 a.m. kick north of downtown. So you can get up there Friday, have a good time, you know, get to the game by mid-afternoon and still do Nashville at night and do the whole Lower Broadway thing if you want to. You kind of already can make a plan for that, book a dinner reservation, those kind of things. That's pretty cool. You know, as far as the trip goes, the Aggie game, you know, is probably going to be at night. We know 2:30 for Oklahoma. That's middle of the day. But, I Longhorn fans in the Big 12 and, you know, where it's been the last several years are frustrated with those 11 a.m. kicks. There are too many of them. Hard to tailgate, hard to pregame, hard to Bevo Boulevard, all those things. The fact that you already know, as you look at the 12-game schedule, you only have two 11 a.m. games, if you include Michigan, you know, two road games, that would be at Arkansas and at Michigan, which you would prefer. And then the only home 11 a.m. game is the Florida game there. The others will be 2:30, 3:30, or night, which you will absolutely take. That's pretty good for the schedule. And speaking of the ease of the schedule, Rod and CJ, or the apparent ease, it's on paper. But I mentioned, and I sent this to Matthew, Phil Steele's College Football Preview magazine will be out here in the month of July. He's been promoting that. So he's kind of dripping out some of his features. And one of the things he put out was the ranking of the schedules in the Big 12, just not the non-conference, but once you get to Big 12 play, who's got the hardest and who's got the easiest? And according to Phil Steele, the Longhorns have the 15th most difficult schedule in the SEC. And there you see it. We just saw the schedule. Mississippi State at Oklahoma, Georgia at Vanderbilt, Florida is Kentucky and A&M. It's a warm welcome for Texas as the SEC enters the SEC in 2024. The Longhorns face more of the league's bottom five teams, four of them, than teams ranked in the top five of our SEC power rankings. Texas tougher matchups, Oklahoma and Georgia come back to back. One is a neutral, one is obviously up in Dallas, one neutral and home. So a favorable schedule for the Longhorns, ranked 15 out of 16 as far as conference mates go. Pretty good for Texas. We talked about that since the schedule came out, but now you see Phil Steele, who's done all the deep dive research and ranked his teams and who's where, and says the Texas Longhorns getting a pretty soft landing into the SEC as far as that goes.
Yeah, and it's funny how the discourse over what your schedule is an indication of what your season will mean, right?
Yep.
You know, we've seen a lot of folks on Twitter not happy with the schedule Texas has been given. It's not Texas's fault. Texas wasn't the one that went out there and scheduled it every game by themselves. The SEC, did they maybe provide a gift for them? Perhaps. But it's not like Texas is ducking anything, right? Texas is moving into the SEC. Texas has, they're one of 15 teams in the entire country that is not playing an FCS team this year. They're going out there playing the national champions. They're going to host the number one team in the country. Three of their biggest rivals in all of college football and college athletics are played on a neutral or away field. So here's my thing, and I see this all the time on Twitter now, is, you look at Texas, and it's easy to want to dunk on them, right? They're coming in with the 15th ranked schedule in the SEC. I understand it, but Texas hasn't ever ducked anybody. Again, they don't play any FCS teams. They're not playing the Citadel in late November. They're not playing McNeese State at home. I mean, this is what Texas does. They schedule big-time marquee games early in the schedule, and then they carry out what the rest of the conference wants for them. Texas just went on the road to Alabama a year ago. Texas had a home and get home set up with USC and Notre Dame in the last decade. They're not ducking anybody. This is what Texas does. They schedule the big games, they go out and play them, and then they come in and they play their conference games. So is it their fault that maybe they're not playing the best teams in the conference? No. Texas is trying to do what they do. Schedule the big games, get the ratings, provide for the world of college football. It's up to the SEC to give them the tough games. And right now, I would say Oklahoma certainly got the shorter end of the stick than the Longhorns. But I have to imagine it's not because of Texas is trying to duck anybody in the SEC. I just don't see that to be the case.
Yeah. Before, Rod, I want your thoughts on that, but I don't know, Matthew, if you have the Oklahoma schedule on that same graphic I sent you, because according to Phil Steele, the Sooners have the toughest, in his opinion, the toughest SEC schedule in 2024. Oklahoma at the top of the list, Texas down at 15, because they do have to play, as Texas is playing four of the five bottom schools, the Oklahoma Sooners are playing the top, as they play Tennessee at home, at Auburn, Texas, of course, neutral, South Carolina at Ole Miss, at Missouri, who's going to be a top 10 team this year, Alabama and Norman, and then at LSU. So even though they went 10-3 last year, they're breaking in a new quarterback and breaking in a new offensive line. That's a lot, right? Trips to Ole Miss, trips to Missouri, trips to LSU. bookend clash with Alabama and LSU just to end the season. That's tough. I mean, that's a lot. Texas had the same schedule, Rod. I don't know that I would be picking them to, you know, be top two or three in the country. I think that's just tough. I mean, you're having to play really good teams on their place. I think Ole Miss is going to be a real good team this year. Missouri on the rise with Eli Drinkwitz. I mean, LSU's LSU and Baton Rouge is Baton Rouge. Tennessee, Bama, Oklahoma. Get ready. Buckle up, Brett Venables.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's going to be tough for Brett Venables, especially I think a lot of it depends on the development of Jackson Arnold, how quickly he adapts to that new offense with Seth Luttrell calling the plays. He's got a new OC, new DCs in there too. So the loss of a lot of continuity within that staff as well from the 1 year to the next with Brent Venables. I like Brent Venables as a coach. This will be a hell of a test to see Brent Venables about his coaching acumen and how well he is at, you know, picking out coaches and selecting coaches for his staff, because that's basically what he's had to do the last 2 years is turn over the top part of that staff. So the offensive line, that's going to be a big question for him too. That may stunt Jackson Arnold's development if the offensive line can't keep him, you know, upright, can't keep him clean. That could also play a big role. How much are they changing the offense from Jeff Lebby's, you know, kind of veer and shoot offense to set the trail? I hear it's going to be very similar, if not them the same. So hopefully that helps the transition for them. But there's no doubt it's going to be, I mean, it's the SEC, so it's tough on everybody. But for Oklahoma's first year transitioning to the SEC, that is quite the Herculean task ahead of them.
Yeah, I will say to CJ, I was just going to say to your point that their non-conference schedule is pretty easy. I mean, they're not playing Michigan in Ann Arbor. So the people criticizing Texas, as you said, they're playing the defending champs on their building. They're playing their arch rivals on the road. They're playing their other rival neutral, and they're playing the number one team in the country. So, I mean, you know, volume of tough games, probably Oklahoma's got more, but top end tough games, Texas is right there with anybody in my mind.
Yeah, definitely. It's actually funny. Syracuse Horn, I wanted to bring this up. OU tougher than Florida? Listen, Oklahoma's SEC schedule, if you just account for the conference schedule, absolutely. You know, I think this is – I actually added up the FPI averages and everything. Out of the top 20 teams in the ESPN FPI, 10 of them are SEC teams. All right, that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Not many teams get to play five teams in the top 20 for the FPI rankings. OU has five. Alabama has five. Florida has five. So that's really interesting to me as well. I actually added up and kind of just took the base average of what the overall FPI ranking was of your conference team schedule was. Oklahoma had the toughest. You know, they out of the 15 other teams that they could play, the average ranking that is on the Oklahoma schedule right now is 13. And that's, of course, Georgia, number one, Texas, number three, LSU, top 15, Texas A&M, top 15, Tennessee, top 10. You know, that's what they're facing right now. So they're facing a really, really tough schedule coming up in the conference as well. Florida's actually right around 17.5, so a little bit lower. They ranked fourth or fifth in this ranking. Texas down at 15th. Missouri was the only school that had a less tough game or, you know, kind of slate of SEC schedules. But of course, Texas is number three here. So whoever Texas plays gets the benefit of adding a number three and doing the math via that way. Texas, of course, not so much. Georgia wasn't much lower on this list as well. So that was something I wanted to add. Of course, Oklahoma, it's not going to be smooth sailing year one for them. That's for sure.
Well, Matthew put it up there, Rod. And Florida has a very difficult schedule, Rod. But the Phil Steele ranking was just SEC games. Florida plays a tough SEC schedule, and they play Miami and Florida State in non-con. You know, that's what makes theirs so difficult, whereas Oklahoma's non-conference is pretty pedestrian as far as that goes. Jefferson Dumas, appreciate the super chat. I live near Gainesville. Been waiting for years to see the Horns blow out the Gators. Final score predictions, guys. Hook 'em, you rock, okay? From Gainesville, Florida, or near Gainesville. Man. I don't know, man. What's that Florida team going to look like come November? It's going to be 11 o'clock kick in Austin. We know that. But, you know, again, Florida, big picture probably has the tougher schedule than even Oklahoma when you put Miami and Florida State, the in-state rivals, on it. If you're just looking at SEC, Oklahoma's is tougher. But, you know, it could be a tough, you know, he's being sued by the former Jaden Rashada, the former quarterback, Billy Napier. We've been around this rod here in Austin. When the natives are restless and aren't real happy with the situation, it can get pretty toxic.
Yeah, and there could be folks are looking behind the scenes, obviously, that may want Billy Napier out already so they can start looking for their next coach. So he's coaching for his job, and there's some folks that don't even believe, you know, that he'll be coaching the team by the time Texas plays. They could have an interim coach in there by then. They got a really tough schedule ahead of them with Graham Mertz as their starting quarterback. I mean, the truth is, we talked about this, CJ. Graham Mertz may be one of the only proven commodities that quarterback Texas is going to play, actually. And one of the top quarterbacks Texas has on the schedule, you know, take that for what you will, but they don't play a lot of proven commodities, high-level proven commodities at quarterback. They got Carson Beck, obviously, maybe the best quarterback in the country. And after that, you know, some people are saying Connor Wegman might be the second-best quarterback they play, or Graham Mertz might be the second-best quarterback they play. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think Texas is just the talent divide between them and Florida, and the Florida might be beat up by then. Texas will be beat up by then, too. Everybody's going to have injuries, but Texas is in a better situation to withstand those injuries because they have a lot of depth and a lot of talented depth on the team. I don't know if Florida's got that kind of talented depth with some of the recruiting issues they've had lately. So, yeah, I mean, that score prediction, I don't know if I can give you an exact score. I think Texas wins by, more than two touchdowns, maybe. Something like that. I don't want to say that blowout, but two touchdowns, that's a decisive one.
I would agree. I can't imagine that line being a single digit. You know, I have to imagine right now with the way that Texas has fielded its team, plus all of the portal departures that hit Florida this winter and spring, they're not going to be the same team that they were a year ago. And that was a team that was still struggling to tread water, right? And I do like Graham Mertz. Rod, I think you made a good point. Texas doesn't face many experienced quarterbacks this year. Graham Mertz is one of those guys. And, of course, coming off of the year where he threw 20 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, they added the kid from Arizona State who could be their number one wide receiver. He had 800 yards a year ago. Arliss Boardingham was a 5-star tight end as well. So they have a few pieces, but that depth late in the year, I just don't see that game being close. I'll go Texas by about 17.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the, you know, to wrap things up on a Tuesday night on Texas football live stream here. Appreciate everybody. More super chats. Which is more likely to happen, Texas winning the Natty or Quinn winning the Heisman?
Oh, that is a good question.
I would say two.
I would go B.
I mean, because that means you can win the, because the Heisman's awarded in early December, right? I mean, you can win the Natty or you can win the Heisman early. Basically, coming off the SEC championship game is when that'll be voted on. You know, he could have a huge year and be 11-1, but you don't win the national championship because you still have a month of football to play, or a month and a half, essentially, as far as the calendar goes. So I would take B on that. CJ?
Yeah, I'll go with Quinn. If this was a year where it was a 4-team playoff, maybe the answer is a little bit different. Of course, potentially a game or two extra might throw a wrench into a bad matchup, perhaps, or if a team gets really hot, just another, law of averages here. I'll go with Quinn more likely than not. Cause again, Texas got a lot of weapons out there for him to have. He'll have plenty of protection up front. And that offense should put up big numbers. So if you can start that season with a win on the road in Ann Arbor, you already have that statement win. You can get that narrative and that Heisman train rolling. I'll go with Quinn.
Yeah, the hype train. Well, and Rod, you know, Michigan is, I don't want to say a shell of what it was, but it's replacing a lot of good players, but the defense was still elite. Quinn puts up a good game and they win that. That's the national narrative. I mean, you'll have won the game, but if he has a good performance against that defense, even though there's a lot of changes, that'll earn him a lot of credibility based and, you know, on the heels of what he did last year and certainly the win at Alabama. Those are the kind of things that rack up Heisman votes, you know, when you start winning those kind of games.
Yeah, the schedule is set up for him to have a great Heisman campaign, isn't it?
Yeah.
You got your big game early versus Michigan, puts you on the map for the Heisman. And then you got that stretch, Oklahoma and Georgia right there. So you got to stay top of mind for everybody. Big game. Then you're going up against Carson Beck. He'll probably also be Heisman front runner. So you can outduel him in the Heisman and then, you know, beat Oklahoma. And then at the end of the season, once you got, your finalists, it pretty much narrowed down. He can make a push in that game because it should be a big game. And hopefully the Aggies 8-win team or something like that. It'll be a really big game, a lot on the line. And then Quinn can go out there and put the cape on, show his capability, pun intended, and go out there and lead the team to victory. And, yeah, it's perfectly set up for him to have the beginning, kind of the middle and the end of his Heisman story if he plays really well in all those big games, has those Heisman moments.
Yeah, and that's maybe a debate we'll have on a future Tuesday night. Should they move the Heisman vote to after the playoff? I mean, NFL doesn't do it, right? It's a regular season award in the NFL, and most pro sports, they don't include the playoffs. But you wonder if they'll start doing like playoff MVPs kind of thing. Then playoff most valuable, they probably should, because that's really where the legends are going to be born. And obviously, Quinn, the SEC championship game, if the Longhorns were in it, would be his final test for the Heisman Trophy, which is given out there in early to mid-December. Great points by all. And one thing I'd say as far as the national championship goes, people don't talk about this enough, but you know, the top four teams will have the week off, but then the 5 through 12 games, the home games, you know, December 20th, 21st, weather could play a factor. You know, if you got to travel to a Big Ten school like Penn State, you know, in Happy Valley in December the 20th or 21st, and travel to Michigan, those kind of things, weather could be a big factor for a team like Texas or one of the Florida schools. When it comes down to that, you want that home game. Austin would be great in December, but weather can be a factor 4 days or 5 days before Christmas playing a football game in Big Ten country. That's going to happen. I mean, you can almost guarantee it the way that schedule shakes out. Guys, great stuff. Texas football on Texas football on a Tuesday night, the live stream. Fantastic. We appreciate you. Let me tell you one more time about our friends at Texas Electricity Ratings. If you do live in a deregulated area, you know where you are, Houston, Dallas, others in the great state. The deregulated electricity market can be confusing. You're still looking, still confused. We've got the answer for you. It's TexasElectricityRatings.com. Shopping website lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, find that good electricity that fits your needs for your family, for your home, for what you got to get going. It also filters out the gimmicky plans and websites like Power to Choose. That's going to trick you into expensive bills. So if you're in the market for that new electricity plan, shop at TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF. That's TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all your electricity needs in the deregulated areas and hook them. We appreciate them each and every week here on the live stream on a Tuesday night. Guys, good stuff. I know coffee and football tomorrow at 8 a.m. What are the big stories you all are going to be watching tomorrow and into the midweek and beyond, CJ?
Of course, just kind of previewing more of what we're, you know, expecting with this official visitor week coming up, as well as some notes and nuggets from the team summer conditioning workouts. We'll also have state of the program later on. And of course, another Longhorn live stream tomorrow night, 7:15.
All right, guys. Rod, great stuff. Good to see you, my friend. Siege, say same thing. And everybody, you know, count down the days. We got you covered. I mean, it's football never ends here on the On Texas Football Channel. Never know when another commitment is going to come down. Could be another one this week or more. Then the big recruiting weekend, it never stops. We appreciate it. I'll see you next Tuesday. Guys, appreciate it. Great stuff. Thank you, Matthew, for all the graphics and additional content, all the super chats. Thanks to everybody who joined us tonight. Have a great Tuesday.
Welcome. Okay.